Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a report from the American computer security company Mandiant, detailed in the New York Times, that accuses China's People's Liberation Army of being actively involved in hacking into U.S. government and corporate data banks, targeting critical infrastructure. Alan Paller, the director of research at the SANS Institute, who has testified several times before House and Senate committees, joins us to discuss what the administration is doing in both waging cyber warfare and protecting America's vital and vulnerable networks. Then, with the Chinese government denying any involvement in hacking, we will assess the extent to which China's military is autonomous from oversight by the Politburo. Scott Savitt, who is a visiting scholar in Chinese media studies at Duke University and a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International, joins us. We will discuss the new Cold War in cyberspace and how China's assertive and apparently independent military shapes foreign policy and regional relations. Then finally, we will speak with David K. Johnston, the president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, whose latest book is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. We will look into why a number of struggling state governments are losing billions in revenues to corporate tax havens, and also discuss the recent manhunt and shootout with a rogue ex-LAPD policeman and David's article at Salon.com, LAPD's Indefensible Dawner Pursuit. And joining us now is Alan Paller, who is the director of research at the SANS Institute, a graduate degree-granting institution and the principal cybersecurity training school. He directs the SANS's research programs, including the widely used Internet Storm Center, the Early Warning System for the Internet, and the annual Greatest Risks in Cybersecurity Study. He has testified several times before both House and Senate committees. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Paller.
Good to be with you.
And given that there's been a lot of hyperbole going on about the Chinese cyber attack by the People's Liberation Army that came out of a report by Mandiant and was featured in the New York Times, it's hardly breaking news. But nevertheless, we have Representative Mike Rogers, who's the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, saying, "I call it cyber terrorism that makes 9/11 pale in comparison." How does it strike you?
I think hyperbole is the active word. We've been watching China for at least since 2002, breaking into a lot of systems, but they're clearly not the only country doing it. And the fact that Mandiant found a building where there are some people housed is not enormous news. What I think is important about this, though, is the number of companies. I think Americans feel that these attacks have been isolated. You hear one, you hear another, but in this one instance, you're hearing about more than 100 companies, and the number in the United States that have been sort of demonstrated to be deeply penetrated are easily in the many hundreds and probably in the thousands. So that's the only big news, is evidence that the numbers are large.
But it seems to me that if we have a kind of Cold War in cyberspace, then what they're engaged in here largely, between the U.S. and China, and I'm sure it's reciprocal, is cyber espionage. It's not actual cyber warfare, is it?
That's exactly right. This is espionage made easy. Computers are the Internet is God's gift to spies, because it makes things that used to be extremely difficult much easier, and they are doing it. At least 125 countries are actively engaged in cyber espionage. What does separate China from the others, not all the others, but many others, is that the PLA has an economic mission. The People's Liberation Army has an economic mission as well as a military mission. So they're using exactly the same cyber weapons against our corporations, against our law firms, against businesses of all kinds that they use against military targets. That does make China somewhat different from the other countries.
Well, it seems, though, that in contrast to China, you could make the case, assuming that we know exactly who is behind the Stuxnet virus that crashed the centrifuges in Iran's secret nuclear program. It's largely been attributed to the U.S. and perhaps Israel, That's not cyber espionage. That's cyber warfare, isn't it? And I understand the Chinese have the Iranians have retaliated against both the Saudi oil company and the Qatar National Gas Company.
I don't know where the line is between that sets off the word cyber warfare. To me, cyber is used as part of any major military activity today. The most interesting one in terms of what cyber can do is when the Israelis bombed the Syrian nuclear sites, purported nuclear sites in 2007. The Syrians had two new radars from Russia, the best in the world that Russia made. And when the Israeli planes came in, they were F-15s and I think F-18s, neither of which are stealthy. But the radars showed no airplanes. And about halfway through the attack, when there were some sounds and they could hear it, the radars showed hundreds and hundreds of airplanes, many more than were actually there. And that's the kind of use of cyber attack to enhance the effect of warfare. If you're going to try to take out a command and control system and you can stop them from using their defenses, it becomes much easier to do kinetic attacks.
Again, I'm speaking with Alan Powler, who's the Director of Research at the SANS Institute, a graduate degree-granting institution, and the Principal Cybersecurity Training School. He directs the SANS research programs, including the widely used Internet Storm Center, the Early Warning System for the Internet, and the annual Greatest Risks in Cybersecurity Study. He has testified several times before both House and Senate committees. Now, the White House, prior to this recent State of the Union, issued an executive order addressing cybersecurity, titled Improving Critical Infrastructure Cybersecurity. And also in the President's State of the Union, he mentioned cybersecurity. In fact, in many ways, it looks like what we're reading in the New York Times today is was already previewed by the President. I'll just quote what he said. America must also face the rapidly growing threat from cyber attacks. We know hackers steal people's identities and infiltrate private email. We know foreign countries and companies swipe our corporate secrets. Now enemies are also seeking the ability to sabotage our power grid, our financial institutions, and our air traffic control systems. We cannot look back from now and wonder why we did nothing in the face of real threats to our security and our economy. Now, as I say, it seems like a preview of what we're reading in today's paper, wouldn't you say, Alan?
Yeah, he had access to better data than Mandiant had about the attacks on the banks and others. But yes, it was definitely a preview.
So what is this executive order going to do in the improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity?
I think alone it wouldn't have done much. But the White House had a meeting on Friday when they released, they and an organization called the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, released a short paper, about 12 pages long, called Raising the Bar in Cybersecurity. So the executive order called for voluntary standards to be set up by companies. The problem was no one had a clear picture of how you stop these attacks. And this paper, Raising the Bar, from the paper from CSIS, actually has the only evidence that we have comes from the NSA, the U.S. National Security Agency, and the Australian Defense Signals Directorate, which is the equivalent of the NSA in Australia, that shows actually that these attacks can be mostly stopped and that the defenses are rather inexpensive. So what actually is going to come out of the executive order is much greater than people expected, because it came along with a prescription that actually can develop defenses that are at least 85% stopping things, and in many cases 100% stopping all of these attacks you're seeing right now.
Well, we know from the Cold War, Alan Powler, that there was, again, a lot of hyperbole about the missile gap and the bomber gap, and a lot of that turned out to be fictional and it just resulted in an escalation of arms on both sides. But there seems to be some real evidence of attacks here, at least in terms of espionage, not in terms of actual cyber warfare. So give us a sense of, again, you know, we've got Leon Panetta in October saying the United States is facing what amounts to a cyber Pearl Harbor. Recently in New York, speaking to some business executives, he said this is the pre-9/11 moment. The attackers are plotting. So again, where do we stand in terms of rhetoric and reality?
The attacks are real. As I said, they're used mostly for espionage, but they're also being used to prepare the battlefield so that kinetic weapons will work better. But what Secretary Panetta has also said, as has General Alexander, as has the head of MI5, is that the biggest problem we face isn't actually technology, it's skills. That we don't have the people skills, our schools are not putting them out, that can fight effectively in cyberspace. And China, for example, has a competition every spring in every PLA district where dozens and dozens of people who have been caught hacking or want to compete, and the ones who win have been caught hacking into the Pentagon, building new cyber weapons. So they have a massive national program to find cyber talent. Russia has had schools for hackers since 1994. The National Security Advisor told me about one in 1994. So we are way behind on skills. And there's only one program in the United States. Governor Christie's actually launching it, called Cyber Centers, that even has a chance to build the kind of manpower that we have. But there's a wonderful slide that the DOD uses that says, in the next war, the tanks will be people. And what they mean is that when there's cyber attacks, things happen so fast that you can't pre-plan your weapons. So you have to actually have people who can respond in real time to these attacks. And those skills are very much like fighter pilot skills. They take many thousands of hours to develop, and we have not been developing that talent. We're hoping the Cyber Centers program will be able to do that.
But that's not to say that we probably don't have the talent in the country. I mean, as much as our public school systems are collapsing, we still have a bunch of brilliant kids that hack, often maliciously and stupidly, but they do it. My understanding is that occasionally the FBI has hired some of these brilliant hackers. Is there a possibility that the U.S. is going to start finding all of these kids sitting in their bedrooms creating havoc and put them all in a big room and take on the world?
I think that's part of what Cyber Center is all about, is take the kids who have talent and try to save them before they become felons. Not much chance that after they've gone to prison that they'll be much help. But there are hundreds of thousands of young people in the United States and older people in the United States who've experimented with this kind of thing, might have done some testing and exploration, and they are definitely the kind of talent that the Cyber Centers program is looking for. So it's yes is the answer to your question, but not after they've become felons. In general, it's hard to get those people to work effectively in law enforcement and military organizations.
Well, I'm sure some people in the audience are wondering, you know, why we're embracing this kind of or licensing this kind of criminality. But I take it that, you know, the point is that the barn doors open, the horses down the paddock.
I was at a high school a few weeks ago, one of our magnet schools in the Washington area, one of our best schools, and one of the people with me is from the military, and he said, "How many of you have a computer at home? Please stand up." And then he said, "If you've ever used that computer to actually break into someone else's computer that you didn't have the right to be in, please stay standing." And 30% of the students stayed standing at this high-end magnet school. And one of the teachers said, "Not you too, Jenny." it's not a sort of criminality. Computer hacking right now, their brand is very much like video games were 20 years ago. They see it as testing themselves, building skills, experimenting with things. So what we want to do is give them a chance to use that for good rather than extending it so far that they become felons.
But in terms of international law and rules of the road, we even have laws of war. Banning chemical and biological weapons, etc. Why can't we ban cyber warfare?
Because it's too easy. Because you can ban it and not stop it, meaning you can have all the laws you want, but certain nations that are rogue nations will allow it and support it. And people within nations where it's illegal will do it because getting caught, it's very difficult to get caught in hacking. And when you get caught, the penalties are not high enough yet to make it onerous to even be caught. So we're at a stage where there are way too many attackers. We're not going to fix the problem that way. We're going to fix it by building better defenses.
Well, just in closing then, Alan Pala, where do you think, I mean, the big hole in this story is we hear all about what the Chinese are doing, the Russians are doing, etc., but we never hear what we're doing. And the assumption is that our military now, NSA, in fact, the former head of the NSA and head of the CIA, Michael Hayden, has an article at CNN where he's arguing that this vast unlocked powers of the NSA that could be used, that would, you know, that would just sort of wipe the floor with the US's cyber rivals, if you will. So do you have any idea of how much, what we're up to?
Most of that's classified, and once I turned 60, I wouldn't accept a clearance anymore because I couldn't remember what I could say and what I couldn't say. So I don't have detailed information about what we're up to. But we have many people. Sands is the main trainer of both defensive and offensive people in this field. And I know we have a lot of people. We just don't have anywhere near enough. And that we need to get the kids, tap the kids to be able to do more. But we definitely are active in cyberspace, both offensively and defensively.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here, Alan Pala.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Pala, who's the Director of Research at the Sands Institute, a graduate degree-granting institution and the principal cybersecurity training school. He directs Sands' research programs, including the widely used Internet Storm Center, the Early Warning System for the Internet, and the annual Greatest Risks in Cybersecurity Study. He has testified several times before both House and Senate committees. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about how much the Chinese government really controls its own military.